Red Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 58th BFI London Film Festival, joined by Cutter Hodier, or Odiern, who's presenting the film Fishing Without Nets here at the festival. So thanks very much for joining us, first of all.
Thank you for having me.
Right, so I think the best way to start off the interview would be to tell our listeners what the story of the film, what the film is actually about.
The film is about Somali pirates, but told from the perspective of the pirates. So it follows Abdi, who's a struggling fisherman living in Somalia, whose family leaves the country to be smuggled to a new place for a new opportunity, and he's sort of left behind and ends up being lured into working with the pirates.
I want to ask you about the perspective in a little while, but first of all, I'm very curious because I just realized that it was a short film, and then you felt like you needed to expand on it to make it a feature length film.
Yeah, so the film is based on a short of the same title, came out in 2012, and actually the plan all along was to try to make a feature film. So the short was both a research and development process for making the movie, but it was also a tool to attract interest in raising the money to make the feature version of it. So the movie came out in 2012 in January at Sundance, and actually by October of that year, we were back in Africa shooting our feature.
Right. So I mean, the it worked basically.
Yeah, it worked, but it was sort of one of those like be careful what you wish for moments, because the making the short film was so difficult. We kind of thought maybe we don't want to go back and make it because it was so hard. But that was just some, you know, trepidation. We were really pretty eager to go back and make it, and that was the plan all along, was to try to do that.
Yeah. So back to the actual film, perspective. You mentioned before that this film is seen through the eyes of the perspective of the pirates themselves. What are the difficulties of making that, and how do you actually get inside that kind of viewpoint and make a film using that perspective?
Yeah, you know, I guess it was in 2010 even when we were doing a lot of the research for the movie. I was really wanting to do something that was like Traffic or a show like The Wire, where you saw sort of every angle of this, which was a really complicated topic. But I was always more and more interested in the pirates and who they were and why they were doing it. So as I sort of find myself trying to write a movie from the perspective of Somalis, and I'm a white guy living in D.C., I knew sort of something wasn't adding up. So we had to go to Africa and actually kind of immerse ourselves in a place where like the piracy trials were being held, and we shot the film in coastal Kenya, mainly in Mombasa. And so there were people who were working in the trade who were around there, and that kind of it seemed like a right place for us to go research. But there's also a huge Somali community who we thought we might be able to rope in to make a short.
It's very interesting. So when you actually set off to go there, you didn't really know much about it except for the research that you... Obviously, when you get there, then it's a totally different thing, it must have been.
Yeah, I would say by the time we actually decided to go, I was pretty... I knew a lot about what was going on, but I knew there was sort of a personal side to who the people were, that I wasn't going to be able to get through the newspapers. So I needed to kind of see that firsthand and then sort of take the approach on one hand as a documentarian, and on the other use all the kind of stuff we were getting in that capacity and fictionalize it and do a good job kind of trying to fictionalize that. So I would say I didn't know anything about the Somali community or Somali culture, and then that was sort of what we gained the most of.
Yeah, was it difficult to like make a fiction film out of it, like coming in from like a documentary, let's say, approach, to fictionalize these events?
It's a satisfying thing, which is if you go in as and you're looking at something as a documentary, and then you can sort of make, you know, take artistic license wherever you see fit. That's sort of the best way to go make a documentary is go say, well, that would have been even better had this happened sort of approach.
But obviously, like, making a fiction film has a lot more restrictions than making a documentary film. But how did you actually shoot it then while you were there? Was there a lot of it that was planned, or did a lot of it actually come out right there and then?
Well, you know, the approaches we try to keep similar from the short and the feature. We always had a structured script in both cases, but all of the dialogue in each scene is improvised by the actors. So they know what's going to we know what was going to happen in every scene, but then there would be kind of a they would basically write the dialogue so that it came across naturally in their actual voice. So that was a process that sometimes would stick to the script, sometimes it would evolve, and we would say that, whoa, something new came up, and we would evolve with it. But we always had sort of a structure to go back to if we needed to. It probably sounds complicated in doing that, but it's really kind of the most natural way to work when there's issues with being able to communicate directly with cast, and when there's just sort of an overall learning process that's going on of just soaking in the culture, you know?
I would say realism. It adds realism.
Realism was the whole... That was our most important word, you know?
Right. So you wanted to really capture it the way...
We wanted it to feel as realistic as possible and feel like what it felt like for us to be there. You know, this is what's ironic, is though it's told from the perspective of the pirates, there's some element of it sort of being told with a little bit of like a hostage's point of view, because that was what I was bringing to it, which was I was a little bit held hostage to the situation of making the film, but I also was seeing things for the first time and sort of confused by something. So I think in a way, if you're a Western audience watching this movie, you're sort of have the a hostage watching it through the perspective of the pirates, but most importantly, in understanding it, in understanding that it's sort of also the perspective of the hostage, which is, if you are a hostage, you want to know the story of your captor. You want to try to understand why they're doing this. This is what Stockholm Syndrome is like based around, is the idea that you want to know why they're doing this to you. And so in a way, it's from the pirate's perspective, but from an audience standpoint, it's like Stockholm Syndrome going on or something.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. There's something about cinematic language that's kind of been shaved, but nevertheless, antiheroes are always incredibly interesting and almost always make for the most interesting characters in cinema. But I'm very curious, because you said something there that you kind of sometimes you felt like you were in a hostage situation. So did you run into any problems while you were there, like dangers? Did you ever encounter anything that might have caused you to feel a little, not going to say unsettled, but Like you were under threat.
Yeah. Certainly on our short film, but it happened more because it was like three of us and a 7D, and there was no kind of preparation. We didn't understand how to navigate the bureaucracy of the Kenyan government and the police, who can give you a lot of trouble. We were still figuring out sort of the lay of the land, so we were just prone to whatever, and we were held up once on a beach by some guys with AK-47s who were dressed as police officers, but we learned quickly we're not, and were just sort of holding us up. But they handcuffed us to one another. There was four of us and only two handcuffs, so they handcuffed us to each other, and they were walking us out into the beach, into the water. This is at night, and there's sort of a loud concert going on, so we couldn't shout for help. That kind of thing did not happen to us. We ended up just paying everything that we had in our pocket, and we got out of there. That was a more direct physical version of it, but it that kind of thing happened in a not as physical way many times. Like, there are people just taking advantage of us or trying to sort of swindle us for something. But on our feature film, we were in such numbers in the location that, you know, the dangerous things ended up being working on the water with all these people and trying to do these complicated shots out on the ocean. Or sometimes there'd be a threat to the set that our sort of security team would have to maneuver. So we just were much more prepared. So even if things like that would come up, we were days ahead of it. So our local security guy was was really good. So he was kind of a few days ahead of anything that sort of seemed like it would be shaky. But you know, we would be in a village where maybe the, you know, one guy had been paid the right sort of thing to make everything cool, but then he had an opposing guy who would come in and say that he should have been the one who was paid. So it was issues like that that were completely in my face on the short, and then on the feature were out on the plate of this guy Tony Rimwa, who was basically handling issues like that. But so it was always a concern. Sometimes it really came up in our face, and sometimes it was sort of out in the distance, but it was always a concern. And even when we got comfortable there, you know, something would happen that would just sort of make you remember that this wasn't, you know, this wasn't, that it had the potential to sort of spin out of control at any moment. I mean, the best example is a week after we wrapped and left, the Westgate Mall shooting and terrorist sort of scenario happened, and we would work out of that mall every once in a while, and that was a place we'd been to. So it was like, you know, it, just when you would think you were getting comfortable there, something crazy would happen.
What's the deal now? How are people going to be able to see it? Is there distribution anywhere?
Yeah, in America, it's coming out. It's in theaters now in a limited release in America, and comes out through 20th Century Fox on VOD platforms on October 28th. But right now we're in the middle of an American tour, so it's in New York and LA and DC and Atlanta and about 30 cities, in some places for 2 nights, some for 5 or 6 nights, some for 2 weeks, some for sort of all over. But it's all kind of a tour. It's like a theatrical tour.
That's. I think that's where cinema is heading now.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to hear that. You know, you got a film, you want people to see it.
Yeah.
Tours.
Yeah, and we, you know, our partner on the film is Vice, and Vice is also involved in distributing the film now. Is now our, you know, our theatrical distributor. You know, they. I think they're sort of a step ahead of that, because I think a movie that's a Somali, you know, language film with no famous actors in it could get relegated to like two theaters in you know, like in New York and L.A. and that's it. And this is sort of somewhere between like a big, you know, 1,000-screen release and a two-theater release.
Yeah.
But I think it's a cool way of getting it out, and we've done some really awesome stuff. We were at. We just opened in Washington this last weekend, which is where I just came from this morning, which is where I'm from, and it was awesome to be there. We were in the AFI's theater in Washington, which is like this grand, like restored theater from the 30s. That was awesome. So I love seeing this on a big screen, and everything is sort of ending up on smaller screens now. So it's super exciting.
How do you feel about that, by the way? Seeing this film in a smaller screen as compared to a big screen.
I'll take it wherever it'll go. But this movie is a visceral film, and was done in a way to sort of be, you know, let you get into the what it feels like to be in Africa. So it's better on a theater screen, and the sound design is done by Skywalker, and is this. Some of the best people in the world did the sound mix, so it's like it's better on a theater, or at least with some really awesome headphones.
Yeah, that's it. I saw it in a small screen, unfortunately, but I all the time I imagine, like, hey, you know, I'd say this film would be absolutely awesome to actually watch in the big screen.
Yeah, well, I watch so much stuff out of a movie theater now, you know, like not in a movie theater, so I can't say that it's not just sort of the way things are evolving. I just think there's going to be some weird resurgence that we can't quite know what it's going to be that will bring back sort of theatrical releases as a bigger thing. But I think it's going to be something that is really obvious, and that we're all like, oh, right.
I
agree. Right. That's what we should have been doing. Like, that's going to be the react.
I'm agreeing with you on a lot of things you're saying in this interview.
Yeah.
But listen, last thing now. How can people see where this film will be shown? Is there a website where people can keep track of what you're doing?
Yeah, fishingwithoutnets.com. is our website. It has a list of all of our theatrical dates for it, and as we start to open the film in Europe as well, that'll be updated. We're playing at a bunch of at festivals coming up at St. Petersburg and Stockholm and Belgrade. Festivals are all coming up in the next few weeks, and so check fishingwithoutnets.com and keep updated on Vice. Cool. Vice.com as well.
Well, thanks very much. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.